You're listening to Circle of Hope's Sunday Meeting Podcast. This talk was given at 2007 Frankfurt Avenue. For more information, check out circleofhope.net or join us in person on Sunday evenings at 5 and 7 p.m.
Have you used Google or Facebook in the last 72 hours? My man. Well, we'll help define this for you. Where is Google? Is it a benevolent generator of helpful widgets and life-improving options? Okay, cut right to the chase. It's a corporation designed to maximize profits through doing what?
Data mining
and selling an advertising space and making their, through data mining, an effective sales tool for them to make money and make money for their cohort. Okay. When it comes down to the core of it, the core of what Google is about, it's about making money for its own corporation through these rather, kind of misleading things. Most of us know that that's what they're into, but we sort of forget. Because if you use Google as much as I do, you sort of just rely on it, right? I've been known to make a Google Doc or two from time to time. I've been known to use some Google spreadsheets, too. What do you know about Riverward's produce around the corner? This isn't like a scary expose events time, but just so you know. Yeah, it's independently owned.
Amazing peaches.
Amazing peaches. Anything else?
Dogs allowed.
Wow, that is a perk for the dog people. Totally. At the core, you know Vince or not, but his for-profit produce shop is for providing nutritious, healthy, and affordable. I don't know how many words I can say that. I'm saying the same thing over and over. I'm sorry. Deliciousness to the neighborhood and to the people who would go there. It's about generating healthy options for people at the heart of it. My dear friend Dimitri and I got to hang out at Emerald Street Community Farm the other day, which was very fun. The good people, we'll talk about their heart being good some other time. And one of the things I love about Dimitri is if you go somewhere with him, he strikes up conversations with lots of people and brings up spirituality, God stuff, religion, very naturally and promptly, and gets at the heart of, like, what are we really doing here? And he and I had several conversations with people who had said, oh yeah, I grew up in some kind of Christian environment, and then I learned that at the heart of it, it was really about just getting people to join their exclusive club where they're in charge of your life. And, I'm paraphrasing, but we heard this a couple times, right? And, like, getting you into either the eternal happiness club or the you're going to burn for eternity. And that is a rather troubling thing for these folks who now claim no religion and say that they're done with it. When we get to the heart about who we are, the Circle of Hope, we want to be similarly to where Jesus was talking to his closest people and bringing it down to the heart of it. John chapter 13, the Last Supper, in the John story, where he's getting together, and he brings it down. Here's what's really important. It comes down to love. And if you get confused in the history of the church, or even in some parts of the Bible, if you need to know what it really comes down to, you could say it comes down to love. That's at the core of it. And he says this to them, a new command I give to you, which really isn't totally new command, right? Maybe he's being a little cheeky. Love one another. As I have loved you, so you must love one another. And by this, everyone will know that you're my disciples. You're the ones who are following in my way and my teachings, if you love one another. That's kind of where we're going for in this this core conviction that also has these illustrative proverbs or wise sayings. That generating justice and hope in our neighborhood must be at the heart of us. When you get down to what we're trying to do together, it has to be about making more possibilities, about bringing hope to situations and even bringing justice into situations. So this talk, excuse me, there's a kind of a lot of bullets to go through. We're gonna try, see how it goes, and then wrap it up, and we'll have some time to talk back if you want to. The first way we've tried to flesh this out, we say that we hope compassion is among the first things people notice about us. We like that somebody would hear about or experience Circle of Hope for the first time through Circle Thrift, and they understand that there's this nonprofit connecting space for people of all kinds of backgrounds here, and also it does global good stuff. But we want to be compassionate in a way that other people can sense, other people can notice, not just so we have a good reputation, but because that's what we want to lead with. We want to make sure that that's happening. Simple enough. We say that we're united in demonstrating the gospel by acting for justice, not merely talking about it. We've all had good ideas that we weren't able to do something about at different points. One of the stranger movements that I've seen among activist circles is a lot of folks who used to take it to the streets in some ways, now take it to the mouse click only. Or most of their activism comes through clicking things and sharing things. It's not bad, and I'm glad that so many people do that. It helps us stay educated and move along. However, there's something that is more beneficial to other people when we show up and we put our bodies on the line. And when we even demonstrate a sense of justice, when we demonstrate different economic realities, different relationship potential, by being together, when we're demonstrating justice, even embodied justice, not just talking about how great it would be when things get reordered. Likewise, we are obliged to speak out against unjust laws and practices that oppress people and ruin creation. I'm going to pause for a moment and just let that one settle. And again, speaking out is part of an action. Speaking is an action, but attempting to model and attempting at creating alternatives is what we're going for. This has to do with some common finances particularly, but we say we do not generally hand out resources, but we extend a resourceful hand. Now, there's a lot of us who have been involved in social work and things like that, and I should just make it clear, we give away a ton of stuff as people, and that's good. We give away opportunities for relationship. People give away places to stay, short term, sometimes even long term. We give away food, give away opportunities for to volunteer, so even money at different points, and that's good. But what we're really looking for is to not just address the end of a deep problem when you get to the final person who's getting ground up by throwing some money just there, is we want to get at the problems. Like if you're familiar with the parable of the Good Samaritan, one of the interesting theological twists that Martin Luther King Jr. said was, rather than just trying to help out these beat up people along the side of the road, eventually we're going to have to ask the questions about what makes the Jericho Road so dangerous, and let's address those issues. But we want to like help empower people, guard their dignity, and also 10% of the money we share in our common fund goes to the Mutuality Fund, which is a tool for cell leaders to use when people are in crisis and need some help. We try to not tell those stories too publicly. We do occasionally say, like, this is generally what's going for people's medical expenses. Someone was about to get evicted, but it's not showing their picture or making them get up in front of everybody to say, hi, you know, I was, you know, my car got banged up by a hit and run. I didn't have any way to fix it, and I had to drive. Thank you for Circle of Hope for providing for me to be able to fix my car. Even though I think if we made people do that, if somebody receives a gift from the Mutuality Fund, if they had to go and stand up in front of people 10 times, we would raise more money. That's how Americans are. We love, and it's good, we love making the direct connect between my dollar touch this person's life. It's a good thing. However, we want to handle that in community, and we really care about people's dignity. We don't need to parade anybody around. We say, like, this is the good works that we're trying to do together, and it's community anyway. These distinctions between, like, I have assets and money and this person doesn't, like, how much are we going to let that separate us rather than trying to move more into community? Here's a little bit of a bigger example of something like that. In the U.S., the sin of racism impacts all we experience. It's a fact of life for which the dominators are accountable. I also found one of my favorite little memes about it. That's here. Systemic racism. Yes. It's really a thing. There's been, over the last 10 years, some movements where I would say that the general attitude of most people in the United States, particularly around racial relations and even some law stuff, I think has softened. Generally, I think people are being cooler about the race thing. However, that is a far, far cry from dismantling white supremacy that has been in the basic foundation of the ideology for the United States since before it even was conceived. And it still is there. If you want just common examples of, like, where systemic racism happens, you know, we just had this learning opportunity about the school-to-prison pipeline. And you could see about the racialized nature of policy and enforcement about where the money goes and the good education goes and who it's available to and who it's not available to and who's incarcerated and at what kind of rates. But also it's worth pointing out that that white supremacy has been emboldened over the last couple months, especially since 11/9. And it's things that were kind of underground and at least becoming, like, less socially okay, that zit has popped and the pus is running out all over us. And it's gross. And we have to do stuff about it. Thank you. We say, this is, I just want to point out that the term right to die, and this next one is in quotes, because that is sort of borrowing the concept from a legal term talking about medical situations, but that's not what we're talking about precisely. That's why it's in quotes. Our compassion teams and mission teams all have the right to die. That is, that they're not obligated to create a permanent program with interchangeable participants. We're trying to help people organize around passion and around inspiration, not just around program and need. For instance, one of the good ideas that we've come up with over the years is the debt annihilation team. You've heard of this?
Yes.
People like it. So there's the third group is going right now, right? The first two groups had six people, all about collectively, you know, $25,000 worth of credit card debt. We used some seed money. They had coaches. They pay this down. Now they're all debt-free. They replenish the seed money. Thank you. And we get to the third group. It's six people, but this time they're closer to $40,000 in consumer debt. Two families in the church used over $5,000 of their savings to say, do it again, and this time let's give it a little more juice. And those folks, as of like last week, paid off all of their debt. And now they're just replenishing the seed money. Pretty cool stuff, right? However, if the people who are really making it work, which right now Maggie McDonald, Donovan Hayes, are primary people making it work, if they lost the passion, we would stop doing it. It's not because it's a bad idea. It's because it requires diligence and it requires passion to do something that difficult. And especially when you're going to mess with people's money, especially when you're going to mess with it in terms of, like, they're already having some, like, dysfunction and creditor stuff and trust issues and the church gets involved and makes it worse, no thank you. So, like, if it's not going to be led by passionate, enthusiastic people who are going to do the hard work, let it go. And that's a lesson that we've learned about sales. We've learned it even with our teams. We say, even if they're really cool ideas, if the people aren't there, the passion isn't there at that moment, let it disperse. Maybe they'll get picked up again, or at least the energy that remains can be put into other things. That's connected to a team, but that I'll talk about in a second as an application of this. But in a culture deformed by violence, proactive peacemaking transforms our individual fears and faithfully witnesses to the Prince of Peace like nothing else. I hope that you're immediately drawn to thinking in terms of the geopolitical violence and state violence, which gets, you know, appropriate violence in most people's minds, and the war machine and the military-industrial complex and this rather disgusting net that has us all caught up in, where upwards towards a third of the money that the government siphons from us goes into making war that disrupts and destroys the lives, mostly ordinary, non-combatant families, mostly poor, who are in the sacrifice zone for the economic interests of the super wealthy. Sorry if that was a lot of big words to describe a system of just, you know, destruction and domination. When we have those systems, when we shine a light on it, and when we even show that another world is possible, it's a potent witness for what Jesus is really trying to do. And opposing the big violence like that, or opposing like the death penalty, or opposing these smaller, also smaller violences that are done to individuals, both with physical violence and also, of course, with undermining one's capacity to belong. The violence of undermining somebody's ability to belong, that's the definition of bullying. But being able to stand up and show a different path is a potent witness. And making peace is a restorative process where it can liberate and bring healing both to perpetrator and to victim. We have the Circle of Peacemakers, a compassion team devoted to trying to make more peace. One of the really cool expressions of that for a while was an intentional household of proactive peacemakers called Shalom House. It was a beautiful thing. Eventually, it got to the point where the household didn't have enough people to continue anymore. We couldn't find people that wanted to live in a house devoted to peacemaking together. So we closed it down. I think that was cool to close it down. I mean, there was loss also. Some people in the church bought a house for the express purpose of those people to live in and then had to figure out what to do with the house. There were problems, but still it was like, this is something that we're so committed to across the board, but it doesn't have the energy or the people particularly for this small, you know, manifestation of it right now. So we wanted to redistribute that energy. There's two more bullets. Just checking in. How you doing? This is a very fast way to do a talk like this. Thank you for trying so well. This one speaks directly to you as friend. Claim your capacity, friend. You're no longer condemned to rely on justice granted by the great other. In this case, the great other is the person, the systems who are making the laws. Relying on justice from the ones who make the laws as if the law changes and that's what's going to ultimately make peace, we're saying that's not enough. And we're liberated from that notion so that while we can speak to the powers, that we can demand justice, we can demand better laws, which do help. You know, there's so many steps of applying laws. And I mean, if you're thinking about policing or who gets legal aid or not, I mean, there's so many levels to just changing a law, but we're embodying something, and we're not, we don't have to merely rely on justice granted by governments and kings and the 1% who ultimately is calling most of the shots. Lastly, we say wealth and power reduce sympathy for the poor and powerless. A marriage between unfettered capitalism and piety makes the Lord's words inconvenient at best and heretical at worst. This is one of my favorites. And it's long, and it's metaphorical, of course, and it's also so poignant. First of all, let me say that the poor and the powerless not only have a special place in the heart of Jesus, but Jesus came into the world as poor and powerless and demonstrated not only how we treat the poor and powerless people is how we treat Jesus, but Jesus is there being treated a certain kind of way. And reduced sympathy for Jesus is a soul problem, and it's in larger communities. But the more power and the more wealth we have, the harder it is to really feel the pain. Like when Greg was getting us to consider Venezuela and to even develop some compassion, some suffering alongside, it's a powerful notion. And for a lot of us, it's so useful to have our worship leaders teach us about justice movements or injustice movements around the world each week. In talking to other people who gather to worship with other folks, that's becoming more and more rare in the world. To say, to follow Jesus, we have to be connected to the plight of the poor and to the suffering of those who don't have power. Real quickly, unfettered capitalism. Capitalism is an economic system that's the simplest way I can explain it is the ethic is that your personal profit is paramount. And when people accept that, the idea of like, well, you got to make money, right? And you say, oh, yeah, right. So even when somebody's doing rather discourteous things in order to increase their wealth, if they explain it like, well, it's business. And the average American shrugs, right? Says business is business. Just a squirrel trying to get a nut. I get it. Got to make the money. Got to make the donuts. Somebody's got to make the money, you know? And it's like, hey, it's just that's the system. When that's unfettered, when that is doesn't even have even sane government regulations, and the wealth disparity is able to creep to where it is right now, it's a dangerous time. And when you combine that with piety, with a sense of holiness, which you got to look back at the last 9 months of American history, again, since 11/9, and the great hypocrisy of the Christian right is being exposed, where folks who are, for the sake of a sense of holiness, back a certain kind of candidate with a program that is directly, you know, assaulting the immigrant, the stranger, the poor person, all of these things that when Jesus speaks to us, Jesus is saying to connect to, care about, be part of, you are these people, this is my body. That's when Jesus' words become inconvenient. Because you have to work a way around it. Say, yeah, caring for the poor and needy. When I was incarcerated, you gave me food. Yeah. That's when, you know, a truly innocent person was incarcerated. And I cared about them. You know, it's inconvenient to have to do that. And when you think that you're right because you have might and God has made you powerfully and wealthy, that can actually make Jesus' words pretty heretical. These are them again, and we'll have some time for you to fill in the gaps. Like any of our convictions, they're aspirational. We hardly do any of these perfectly. They're full of valiant attempts by limited people. But we do have some new expressions and new compassion teams even. We have about 20 of them. If you go to our website, which is circleofhope.net, check out the compassion teams. You see them all listed in the contact info and how to get involved. Most of you are already connected to a team. It's pretty awesome. The newest one is connecting us with friends, the Friends of Penn Treaty School. It's a school in Fishtown that Brooke Hoffman used to teach at, has remained involved with, Lizzo and Mickey, and some of the folks who are organizing these game nights are trying to help us connect with another local school. It's awesome. And for some people, it's just playing board games is where it starts. There's more and more opportunities to do stuff coming up. The 25th this month, you'll hear more about it. You'll see a slide later about the different work days at the urban farms, the Heartland Gardens, Sunday mornings, if you want to go work on that cool farm. Tuesday nights, there's the Frankfurt Ave Garden up the street. Those are compassion teams. There's other opportunities that aren't even necessarily as team-oriented coming up, that are opportunities for you to be able to express your heart. Like this Saturday, we're assembling refugee relief kits as part of our work with MCC, our Global Peace, Relief, and Development Agency. On the 19th, the next Saturday, there's a free baby and kids' goods exchange, which sometimes for us, if this one's at 2214 South Broad, we might think, hey, if it's all the way down there, it's not our turn, but it may not be your turn to volunteer there, but it might be your turn to talk it up. Talk to some of your friends who have gobs and gobs of baby stuff and help liberate them from their excess. Thank you. Or you know people who need some stuff and people in between. We help get the word out, bring them together. And on Thursday, the 24th, the Watershed Discipleship Team, the 24th is a Thursday. We're having a learning session here because Jeremy befriended this I'll just call him this dude, Zach, for now. But we're going to have a learning session about Solarize Philly, which is an initiative to get 500 households in Philadelphia on solar power through installing solar panels. And there's several ways that are making that more viable, more affordable. And it's also, you know, if you know anything about the technology, it's also kind of problematic. Most of the materials that they make, the sand that they mine to make the glass, to make the panels, most of it comes from the same little area in the Gulf of Mexico, right, which is destroying this one blue-green algae that the smaller ecosystems are built on, that the larger ecosystems are built on. It's not perfect. There's no technology that's going to save us, truly. However, this could be a really good example. Say there's 500 households in Philadelphia that are going to do this. I've just been asking people, what if we had 200 Circle of Hope households that would do it? Kind of cool. Kind of a cool story to tell. I mean, that's like the kind of like, know what we're into? We just figured out how to get 200 households to do solar panels. We're going to try to do other stuff too, but I mean, that'd be awesome. Awesome. This is about getting to the core of who we are, of what Jesus has given us, and we want that to be about generating justice and hope in ways that people who aren't part of the movement directly right now can sense, can actually feel, can receive something.
Thanks for listening to Circle of Hope's Sunday Meeting Podcast. If you want to talk about it or get connected to a cell, you can find one under our Connect dropdown at circleofhope.net.